fees are lower, but this comes at a cost, and the cost is that companies will invest less. They will invest less where they make less money.
Welcome to another in our series of Vox Dev Talks, recorded live at the Center for Economic Policy Research Paris Symposium 2023. My name is Tim Phillips. We have reported many times on mobile money, mostly on the opportunities it creates for the people who use it. But we've never considered how the mobile money market in Africa operates and how that might affect things like financial inclusion. Nicola Limodio of Bocconi University is one of the authors of a new paper that fills this gap, and he joins me now. Nicola, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Hello, Tim.
The statistics and the growth and the use of mobile money, they're dramatic, aren't they? In what ways has it improved the lives of people in Africa?
Multiple. Mobile money has been a force that has transcended any other innovation that took place in Africa, changing the way in which people send money to each other, remittances, the way in which people share risk in case of adverse events like natural disasters or climatic shocks, the way in which they save, the way in which they're paid. I'm trained on thinking about banks, but once you go on the ground in Africa, you'll see that mobile phones and payments using phones is one of the most widespread technology.
But also, I guess what this means is that there are more and more providers of mobile money as well. We hear about the same two or three, but there are many more, aren't there? How fast has this grown?
Not nearly enough. We think about the benefits of mobile money as very tangible, and the academic literature has really pushed us to identify very carefully those effects and quantify these beneficial elements. At the same time, not nearly enough has been said about how the market works, and the number of providers is one of the issues, but even more deeply about how expensive is it to make a transaction.
Yeah.
And so what we do in this paper, joined with Marcus Brunner-Meyer at Princeton and Lorenzo Spadavecchia, a PhD student at Bocconi, is to think about the costs and the benefits of mobile money. In particular, we observe a trade-off between competition between mobile money platforms, which is possibly good for consumers, and the fact that more competition may lower financial inclusion, which is definitely bad.
And not necessarily what we would expect, certainly not what we would want. I mean, to understand this, we have to understand the relationship between the mobile money provider and the mobile network provider, because they're different but closely linked, aren't they?
This is exactly the issue of the paper. Think about, you want to make a payment with your phone, you need to have service on your phone. And what has been going on for many years in Africa is that there was, quote unquote, vertical integration between these two. You could not use any provider for your mobile money transaction except the one providing you with phone services. So these are integrated. Now, this may have some cost to consumers. For instance, I catch you with an attractive mobile network promotion, and then I charge you very high mobile money fees. That's what we see in the data. Now, this is bad for consumers. At the same time, this gives mobile network companies incentives to install many number of towers, because I want you to always keep business with me.
So the towers are the things that create the link from the phone into the network. In advanced economies, we're not really used to seeing a tower. If you look really hard, you can see stuff fixed to the top of buildings. But in rural Africa, it's a sort of standalone device, isn't it?
This is correct. To give you a quick preview, what we see is when interoperability is introduced, it's a policy that promotes competition between platforms. As you may guess, these fees on mobile money transactions drop. But there is no free lunch in economics, sadly. And you see that towers and mobile signal declines. When we found this, we were surprised because we were not expecting this decline. As you point out, when we think about mobile towers in high-income countries, these are, you know, little antennas that are all around us. These are typically a sunk cost. This is a big investment that has been done and does not have much variable cost. In Africa, on the contrary, first of all, this infrastructure is being built as we speak without much government intervention, because, you know, obviously governments are constrained by their financing. But the key issue is the cost of these towers.
Mm-hmm.
In high-income countries, towers are connected to electricity and they work through electricity. In Africa in particular, many towers are not connected or they are in areas with very unreliable electricity. As a result, how are mobile networks operating in most of Africa? Well, using diesel generators.
Wow.
So that's the key issue. Because of these diesel generators and security next to it, towers have a high variable cost beyond, you know, the sunk cost dimension. And that's why, as a company, when I have more competition from other companies, I'm making less money, well, I'm just going to cut some of the towers that were not very profitable to begin with.
Interesting. So let's have a look at how this market works then. When you have the mobile network provider and they're tied to the mobile money provider, as you say, there is the opportunity with this vertical integration to make more money, to boost your profits. How does this interoperability just happen?
Mm-hmm. So interoperability has been discussed, you know, for a while. I remember I was a pre-doc at the World Bank, before pre-docs were a thing. So in, I think 2010, the CEO of Safaricom, you know, was greeted as a development champion who probably, you know, in many instances, Safaricom has been responsible for a lot of great, innovative and beneficial work. I was also puzzled by the fact that the profit margin of Safaricom were extremely high, in the order of beyond 100%. There was something going on. Interoperability basically means that on your phone, you have a certain mobile network. You're no longer obliged to use exclusively the mobile money provider of that network.
Mm-hmm.
And in principle, you could use multiple. Then, you know, it's unclear whether you actually do. But the threat of competition is what really matters in this market. Because now companies are worried that you may go elsewhere for your money transaction.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need to act and cut their fees in order to retain you. And that's really the mechanism at heart that generates the effects that we find in our data.
And who's driving this interoperability?
In most cases, it's really central banks that are pushing for this financial innovation. What would happen is that central bank will create some online system that allows digital payments to be made, where mobile money companies, banks, insurances will all work. And that basically pushes interoperability in the system. So in a sense, it's really central banks, the provider of digital innovation here.
Now, you're trying to find causal effects here. And for this, then surely the introduction of interoperability has to be in some way random. I can't imagine that's true.
Oh, so you caught me. If there is an identification police, I'm willing to give you my hands.
They're waiting outside for you.
But to be fair, it would be implausible for me to argue that interoperability is randomly assigned.
Mm-hmm.
The best we can do here is to collect data, basically from central banks and companies. We can do really two things. First, to show you that countries that introduce interoperability and those that do not, quote unquote, our control, don't appear to be different along many observable characteristics like GDP or growth or exports, imports, government revenue, indicators. You know, you may think that countries that grow more are more likely to adopt interoperability. It doesn't seem to be the case. The second issue is that, as usual, we will try to establish whether there are parallel trends before the policy, which would be per se one way to argue that even if these settings are different, as long as they are on parallel trends, there is some plausible, now I don't want to call it plausible deniability, but you know, in a sense, some plausibility that the control is a reasonable control. And so we take it from there.
Now you want to establish that this has an effect on the pricing of mobile money. So you need some data on how much it costs to use mobile money.
Very good. Very good. This is the part I'm most proud of, because typically in a paper, I mean, some of the machinery is quite standard. Now, you've seen many of us academics jumping here and telling you more or less methodologically the same things. There is always a spark of creativity in a paper, and that's what makes me really proud of this paper, beyond having great co-authors and, you know, great predoctoral fellows that work with me. So some reports by IPA and other organizations said, you know, we know about the benefits of mobile money. We don't really know about the cost. There are no data sets about the cost. And I thought, really? I mean, we're in 2022 at the time, 2020 maybe. We must be able to find some data. And so I thought, let's go on the websites of companies.
Mm-hmm.
Websites of mobile money operators display the structure of the fees. And then we said, okay, let's take this link on Wayback Machine and construct a panel For those who don't know, Wayback Machine is a digital archive that scans the web and has pictures of all the web.
It is amazing, isn't it, when you find it? It's at archive.org, and you can find what web pages look like in the past.
Nothing leaves the internet. For the sake of our study, this was useful because in this way we could build, you know, a time series from 2010 onward, basically measure fees. And already, in my opinion, just the measurement of fees is quite mind-blowing because we knew about the incredibly beneficial effects of mobile money without the counterpart of the cost.
Mm-hmm.
The average fee on a mobile money transaction is 4%. To put it in perspective, the average fee on a credit card transaction is 50% less.
Mm-hmm.
And this is part of it. I mean, you may or may not be surprised, depending on your benchmark. What is most interesting about mobile money transactions is that I am on a company, MTN, I'm sending you a payment, and I pay 4% upfront. This is not like credit cards, right? Where it's all behind. The fee changes depending on the value of the transaction. So that what we find, and you know, we had no prior about it, low value, small payments are the ones taxed the most. We talk about an average fee for the lowest two brackets of 30% and 10%, which is quite mind-blowing, especially in consideration that these are likely to be the brackets used by the poorest people. The simplest evidence that interoperability shapes this market is that before the policy, we see that fees were negatively correlated with the value of the payment. Largest payments had much cheaper fees than smallest payments. After interoperability, it almost becomes flat. And so that's one way to start giving you evidence that fees come down, especially for lowest value payments. I would say especially for poorest individuals using this. And that's awesome.
For this part of the story, we can be really happy. We introduced competition. It has lowered fees, especially for the people who have the least to pay.
So when I was, you know, that young economist at the World Bank, we'd be like, haha, we go after the monopoly and we win. People are better off. Sadly, with aging comes responsibility and thinking hard about the problem. And yeah, fees are lower, but this comes at a cost. And the cost is that companies will invest less. Mm-hmm. And they will invest less where they make less money. The usual anthem of economists is marginal cost equal marginal revenue. I'm giving you a policy that gives a negative shock to marginal revenue. And companies will cut all towers that are no longer financially viable.
Mm-hmm.
That will imply cutting service on average in different districts, on average by 4-5%, which means that a district before had, I don't know, 90% coverage, the land covered by signal was 90%, it will convert to something like 85. And this is going to be highly heterogeneous. Poorer districts are going to be more likely to be left without coverage. Rural districts.
This data, I imagine, is easier to find network coverage. And so we find this trade-off exists everywhere where this is happening. Prices go down, so does network coverage.
Sadly, this is an issue. When Marcus, Lorenzo and I were thinking about, okay, so first of all, it was not trivial to observe this effect. And it all boils down, in our opinion, to this cost problem of, you know, these diesel towers. But we're thinking, okay, what to do next? What policy would we recommend? And on the basis of something we could study. One of the issues here, if you take a step back in abstract thinking as an economist, is that the real problem is that there is really uniform pricing here, which means you are in the center here in Paris, I am at outskirts or somewhere on an island in France. We're ultimately going to pay the same cost for a mobile money transaction. But the cost for the company are going to be very different. Here in Paris, the tower is connected to electricity. Basically, the marginal cost is almost zero. On an island, you will need, you know, all the tower and the diesel generator and so on. The issue here is the lack of price discrimination. You would like, ideally, center of Paris and the island, or in Africa, people in capital and people in rural locations, to pay an heterogeneous price depending on the cost of the company providing the service. Just to clarify, Tim, this doesn't happen in Africa, but not even in our countries.
Mm-hmm.
Supermarkets typically charge you the same price, either if you are in central London or somewhere in a remote area. You know, there is research by De La Vigna and Genscow showing it for US supermarkets.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, fine, we know this, and we know that this price discrimination is an issue. Can we study this? Well, it turns out that many countries introduce subsidies for rural telecommunications. So countries are worried that rural individuals are left out of the system. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they introduce these subsidies. What we observe is something that is kind of funny. So interoperability leads to a decline in coverage. When these subsidies are introduced, this decline is less severe in rural areas.
Yeah.
And guess who's going to get a steeper decline? Urban areas.
Mm-hmm.
So companies will do the following. I have a subsidy, so I'm not going to cut as hard rural areas. I'm going to probably cut the ruralest urban areas.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, there is no free lunch even here. But at least it's more likely that those rural communities were in most need of service compared to people in proximity to an urban area where they might substitute more easily.
As you say, there is no free lunch here. It depends very much on what your policy priorities are, I guess. The best thing we can do is to know what is going on. And then if there are subsidies, you can adjust them accordingly.
Correct. This is a possibility. We are thinking of a few ways forward. The market for towers in Africa is really shaping up on its own. So while governments are probably looking into this, there are private companies that are buying towers in and of themselves,
mm-hmm.
and merging them, separating them, providing services. So there is a market that is taking place. Another part that we found interesting is, okay, basically I'm telling you, hey, if you were an individual in an urban area that did not experience a decline in coverage, you're better off from interoperability,
mm-hmm.
because fees went down. If you're someone who lost coverage because of interoperability, fees went down, but well, you can't really use the service anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what the fee is.
It doesn't. So our thought was, okay, now, you know, we have all this evidence, these fees from Wayback Machine, these maps on coverage from GSMA, but overall, what happens to mobile money? Because in urban areas, the use could go up. In rural areas, it's doomed to go down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are data from the IMF, the Financial Access Survey, where, you know, it's country-level data on number of transactions or number of accounts of mobile money. And, you know, there are surveys by the World Bank, so Global FinTech. Do you get remittances on your phone? Do you get your wage paid on your phone? And so on and so forth. We saw that overall countries appear to witness a decline in the use of interoperability. So one of the reasons for this is the following. You talk about priorities. Well, most of the use of mobile money is really from individuals that move from rural to urban and want to send money back to their parents.
Yeah.
Companies were able to charge high fees, especially to poor people, because what is the alternative there? You are migrating from the countryside to urban. If you want to bring money back, you should basically take a day off, probably take 9 hours to do 20 kilometers. So it was a very expensive but convenient.
Mm-hmm.
Which, as an economist, it means that the company was charging you your outside option and so extracting a rent. Now, the next step here is really thinking about a small reduction in rural users can lead to an amplified decline in transactions, because now you will have people leaving out mobile money altogether, mm-hmm. and using alternative systems. Lorenzo Spadavecchia, for instance, is working on a very promising setting where he can study substitution away of mobile money. If you're interested in these topics, keep an eye on Lorenzo.
We will do. But what this shows is some unexpected consequences. There are policies, there are ways to structure the market to get close to what we want, but you can't get everything sometimes, and financial inclusion has suffered, even though no one intended it to do so.
Absolutely. What we are trying to do with this paper is also to push more research on this.
Yeah.
There are many methods that can allow to study what works in this area.
Mm-hmm.
We are starting to understand what are the specific frictions. Lack of price discrimination. These, you know, expensive towers that run on diesel. We are pointing the arrows in a certain direction. A very comprehensive literature has shown the benefits of mobile money. We are pointing to the cost and thinking about how to design the market. And that's probably what is ahead of us.
It's a very interesting strand of research. And as you say, one that we haven't got enough of just yet. So thank you for filling that gap. And we look forward to hearing what Lorenzo has to say in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Tim.
The paper is called Mobile Money, Interoperability and Financial Inclusion. And the authors, Marcus Brunemeyer, Nicola Limodio, and Lorenzo Spadavecchia. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe on your podcast platform, wherever you get your podcasts. Have a look, you'll find us there. And our past episodes, as always, are at voxdev.org, where we also feature articles about the papers we cover.